time I'd like to call this House Resource Committee to hearing. Today is February...
12th.
12th, and the time is 1:05. Present are Representative David Guttenberg, Edgman, Kawasaki, Seaton, my friend Peggy Wilson, and myself, Co-Chair Newman. And also present in the audience is Representative Alan Up.
I just read.
Representative Tuck.
Second.
I would never forget him and that. With that, today we're going to have House Bill 41 by Representative Seaton Wilson in front of us. I think Representative Seaton is the primary carrier of this bill. And with that, let's get rolling, and Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to present this legislation today to the committee. And HB 41 deals with conflict of interest at the Board of Fisheries. It's identical to HB 15, which was heard in the last legislature, and all of you except Representative Tuck have seen this in identical language before. And at that time, it passed the House 33-2. For brief background, of course, the Board of Fisheries consists of 7 members, and they are confirmed by the legislature. The members serve 3-year terms. The board meets 4 to 6 times per year in different communities around the state to discuss different statewide issues. And board member conflicts of interest are governed by the Executive Ethics Act. And I believe, well, we do have Jim Marquette of the Board of, the Executive Director of the Board of Fisheries to answer specific questions in the audience today. HB 41 is addressing several problems. The first is recusal of members due to participatory conflict of interest that takes them out of the discussion. It takes out members that have the most knowledge to offer on a particular regional fishery. And they can testify as a member of the public, but they can't participate in deliberations or votes if they're recused. The problem is the broadness of the executive branch definition that allows a member to be conflicted out. If a member of their family and someone maybe they haven't even seen in years and barely know, even an estranged brother-in-law, for instance, has a interest in a fishery. And it really affects disproportionately the rural parts of the state that have a strong fishery basis for their economy, because, of course, you have extended families and people are that aunts, uncles, almost, you know, extended family participate in some aspect of a fishery. And so the solution here is a pilot program, because it has a sunset in it, to allow members to, that have a participatory interest in a fishery, be that a sport commercial interest or a commercial fisheries interest, to deliberate on the issue. They would not be able to vote, however, if they had a personal interest. And so the other solution is to apply the Legislative Ethics Act definition of family to board members for the purpose of defining, as opposed to the Executive Ethics Act, how broad a family member is. So we have within our Legislative Act those members that are direct relations, that live with you, supported by you, those kind of things, but not an extended family, aunts, uncles, cousins that do not live with you. There's a difference between the Ethics Act and Executive Ethics Act and the Legislative Ethics Act, and this would, again, put in the same requirements that we have in the Legislative Ethics Act. The you have a in your handouts a report, a background on information of Alaska Board of Fisheries conflict of interest disclosures and Ethics Act compliance in regard to HB 41 and that's updated to February 12th, 2010. And so we'll be referring to that some as well. On the average, between 2001 and 2006, individual members were required to recuse themselves on nearly 10% of the proposals in each board cycle. If you look at the average now between 2001 and 2010, that's 11%, and that's found on page 2 of that package. And a board member would have a conflict of interest on an issue under this bill when a board action might affect a member of the person's household, but not the extended family. So if we might take a look at this document, that's the one I just cited, Mr. Chairman, that's the from the department.
Representative Keaton?
Yes.
Which one is that?
That is the background information on Alaska Board of Fisheries. It has the ADF&G logo on the front. And that's prepared by Jim Marquette, Executive Director of Alaska Board of Fisheries. And if you look in that, you'll see that on page 2, that's labeled page 2 there, you'll see down there the pattern from the last 9 years. It has given you that now we have increased to overall 11% of proposals addressed by the board have been subject to a ruling of conflict of interest. And in some years, the conflict is as low as 3%, and in other years, as high as 20%. On page 3, you see it.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
So I'm looking at that, and so when we're talking about 11% average of the proposals, and they're doing, from this information, I'm looking at 250 to 500 proposals, so 325, so 32 of them out of an average of 325, and I'm trying to average 250 and 500. That's what we're talking about here?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and if you look on some of the other pages, there's a nine-year summary of the Board of Fisheries proposal, and it'll give you the breakdown by year of exactly what those percentages are, the number of proposals, and the number of recusals.
And Representative Seaton, generally, where do these conflicts come in, or is it, you know, and we always get this deal about, is it subsistence, is it sport, is it commercial? And I know that it's the governor's job to try and appoint members to the Board of Fish and the Board of Game to try and make sure there's a balanced background and diversification in that of knowledge and users of the resources. So if I was to try and look at this and say, okay, out of the average of 32, I'm just, again, averaging the averages, how would that break out if they were a subsistence conflict or a commercial conflict or a sport conflict?
Mr. Chairman, it's more by regions than specific. If you would look on the fourth page in, there's a chart. It's called Table 2 that said Board of Fisheries votes abstentions by members October 1 through February of 2010.
Does everybody have that? Okay.
And if you look down three-quarters of the way down the page, you'll see, let me back up. If you look in the third column of numbers over, it says percent of meetings with conflicts. And you can see that the person that had the most conflicts was Robert Hyano from Dillingham, 23% of the meetings. The second one was Vince Webster from King Salmon. The third one was Grant Miller from Sitka. The fourth was Ed Dersham from Anchor Point. Now, the one, two, and three were commercial fishermen. The fourth most was a sport charter operator. And then from there you go to John Jensen and Mel Morris, both had 9%. And again, they're from areas that have fisheries as an industry base, so there's a lot of people that participate through an extended family. And then next was
Representative Seaton.
Art Nelson. Yes.
Just On the chart that is Table 2, Board of Fisheries, that is referred to, I went down to the Robert Hayano and followed the total number of meetings, and then on the column on the right-hand side, it's percent of proposals with conflicts, and then his is at 5%. The greatest number is 7%, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 14, 15, 16, 17 of them out of, well, there's about 17 that have zero conflicts, and like 4 or 5 that have up to 7%, and a 5%, and a 2%, and 1, and a 1, and a 1, and a 3. And so when I was trying to, what I'm trying to get at, when I looked at the numbers prior to this, and it said the number of conflicts were at 11%, and then out of the 250 and 500, average that out to try and get to that 32. I'm trying to correlate those numbers together here, because where am I missing a boat?
It's, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Vedma.
It's a little more complicated than just to look at it simply in terms of a straight line analysis. And if I could, before Representative Seaton and Mr. Marcotte talks more about it, you've got to realize that the board has cycles where they meet every 3 years. They'll go out to Bristol Bay. They'll go out to Cordova. Maybe they'll go to Southeast. You got to factor that in, number one. If you look at this chart here, Russell Nelson, for example, 2001, 2004, you know, Russell was not an active fisherman. So therefore, in terms of immediate and economic conflict, that's a different situation than Robert Hayano, who was an active fisherman, who had relatives who
commercial fishermen
who was both in the commercial or both in the drift and the set net area. And then you got to take that 11% and then realize, if you've ever been to a board fish meeting, to see the guy that the representative there who's supposed to be representing your interest has to sit in the back of the room because he's conflicted out. That makes no sense at all. And this issue, I'll close here by saying it's been mightily shortchanged by the legislature, in my view. And Representative Seaton and Chair Newman, thank you for the time.
And Chairman Newman,
Seaton?
I think that maybe the easiest way to look at the issue you want to look at is Table 1, where it actually has the number of proposals per cycle. The number of votes per cycle and the number of abstained or.
Yeah, does everybody have
or
that?
With the conflicts.
Representative Tuck.
Now your summary, yes.
Okay. Go ahead, Representative Seaton.
So you'll notice that the number or the percent of proposals with a conflict, if you go across there, it's very dependent upon the year. Because if you have a year in which the Southeast proposals are on the table, if you have a year in which it's in cycle so that they're considering not only statewide but the Southeast proposals, and if you have a member from Southeast who's a fisherman that's on the Board of Fisheries, then you're going to have a large number of conflicts in that year. If you have something in Cook Inlet and you have no member of the board from Cook Inlet, you're not going to have those conflicts. But again, you'll notice that the fourth most common was Ed Dersham, which is about on Table 2, about a third of the way down from Anchor Point. And his total conflict was as a charter operator. He was not a commercial fisherman. He was a sport charter operator.
And Representative Seaton, yep. and I'm reading that, but I still look at his percent of proposals with a conflict at 3%. And Representative, if I would, Representative Osterman would like to testify on this bill, but he has to go up to finance and do some work up there and try and make sure we have a good conservative straight budget.
I would be happy to yield the table here, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for accommodating me. I do have to run off to finance here in a second.
Well, we got this one in our pocket, Representative Osterman.
Thank you. I'm Alan Osterman from Kodiak. I have sat on the Fisheries Committee for 6 years prior to me moving on to the Senate, and this is one of the issues in that, during that period of time, that has always cropped up as an issue of needing to be addressed, and that is the conflict of interest that the Board of Fish members have based upon what the current law is and the tight interpretation by the Department of Law. And if there's been so many times that these conflicts have come up, and because of the way the law is written, that the Department of Law has a very strict interpretation that if you've got any kind of finance or personal conflict at all, and if your great uncle had a conflict or was involved, that took you out of the picture. And so they've been trying for a number of years to come to an agreement on how it should be done. My personal opinion is that the Board of Fish members should be able to declare every conflict they have at the beginning of the meeting and then do business. And if they have a financial conflict, they put it on the table, and everybody sees it. Everybody sees how they vote. Now, I noticed that we have not been able to get to that point in all the years that this issue has been coming up, and I think that you've reached a fairly decent methodology of doing it with them being able to debate the issue and not vote. And that's fine. I don't it's a step in the right direction compared to what we have today. If one thing that I would request is that you give this a couple years time to work to see how it works rather than just skipping it until June of next year. And your sunset date is June 2012. And I think that may be enough, but you're only going to go through it just a, you know, 1 year cycle basically by the time you get to June of 2012. And I don't think you're going to have a very good reading on how this thing will work. So if you could extend that out, that would be great.
Thank you. And I think that you said that you'd like to see in the bill, and I don't know if it's in there or not, that members, if they announce a conflict, that they put all their financial interests out there on the table when they do that?
If it's, yes.
And is I that think in the bill?
This does talk about personal and financial conflicts. Yeah. Is that correct?
And then I think we've got Representative Kawasaki had a question. Okay, Representative Guttenberg. Go ahead, Representative Guttenberg, and I'll ask
you one. Thank you for all the times you've sat through Fishery Board meetings. I know, you know, in your career, knowing what it has been, that's been a lot, and you know a lot more about it than I do. But, you know, we've all sat through boards, and many times it's just the dynamics of the board. What is part of the issue that I'm hearing here is that somebody who is representing a specific group can no longer participate, and now giving them the opportunity and people from that specific community, whether it's a geographical community or a business kind of fishing community, feel that they're not being represented on the board. But is there also a problem when all of a sudden somebody is not voting and there's a situation where there's not a quorum or there's a tie vote, or do those things happen? Is that a consideration?
That's exactly what does happen on a number of different times.
Representative Osterman.
Thank you. Yes, there's a number of different times when that does happen, and it probably doesn't happen the amount of times that there's not the ability for them to vote on the issue because they don't have enough members. But it really gets down to the fact that the person with the most knowledge is not even able to debate the subject, not even being able to talk about the subject because the Department of Law says you're not going to do that. We had one instance where one member of the board worked for what they call the ATSI processors, and it was made up. The ATSI processors were made up of a bunch of processors, particularly from the Seattle area, but they did have processing plants in Alaska. So every time a issue came before the board that had any kind of effect on any one of those processors, even though it was just one processor out of the whole bunch that he represented, And it could have been only one processor in one tiny part of the community or the part of the state. Department of Law's interpretation of the way the law is written today is that that member had to exclude himself from even debating or talking about the issue. So, it's ludicrous the way it's set up right now and the way the Department of Law interprets. And when the Department of Law comes forward and makes that determination, most, and I haven't seen yet that any of these board members have stood up and said, well, wait a minute, that's wrong. Most of them have accepted the fact the Department of Law knows what you're talking about. But at the same point in time, it really does mess up the deliberation of
Representative Osterman, are you, and we'll make sure that you get a copy, but it's interesting you mentioned the Department of Law several times, and here's where I start. I'm kind of in a quandary here on this one, because Judge Carl Johnstone, who sits on the board, does not support this bill. So you've mentioned how the Department of Law is very strict on it. We've got somebody who's on the board, who happens to be a judge, who happens to be a person who received more comments, and every one of them positive, than any other member that this committee has gone through when we have to certify them for moving them onto the floor or onto the board for approval. Judge Johnstone received, as far as I can remember, more positive comments than anybody for trying to be fair, and right down the line. And I don't think there was any negative comments. But he said that he doesn't support this bill, and I just find it interesting that we have a judge who's sitting on the board who does not support the bill.
I have not had the opportunity to talk to him about what his interpretation or why he doesn't.
Yeah, and for that, just for the members too, I always try and gain public information. I think that's the most important thing that we can do, and ask our people who sit at a lot of Board of Fish meetings, and I've been to a few myself, members of our Fish and Game Advisory Committees who go there, and ask their opinion. And that is my intent, is to send this to the advisory committees for Fish and Game. People who do spend a considerable amount of time there, ask the public what their opinion is on this. I think that's a good way to do that. So we'll probably hold that over so we can ask that opinion.
Mr. Chairman, my suggestion would be that if you're going to do that, that you also look back at who are all the past chairmen of the Board of Fish, and ask every one of them as well, because they're the ones that have to sit and organize the meeting and run the meetings and try to get the business done for the Board of Fish and look at the laws and everything else. So my suggestion is you send a letter to each one of those members and get their input as well, because I think you'll find probably 100% of them in one research that I did on this when I worked for the administration, that every chairman of the Board of Fish, as far back as I could find, supported some type of change to the conflict of interest.
And we can do that. And I just want to make sure that, a lot of people who sit and listen to these every day and spend a lot of time, ask them what their opinion is, because they're the guys, the public that we represent, and I think that's a pretty right. important that we ask their opinion on it.
Thank you very much.
Do you have questions for Representative Osterman, Representative Wilson?
I don't have a question.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Edgman.
Well, on that point, I would be very interested in hearing more from Judge Johnstone on this issue, whether it be in writing or whether he testify. Because just to support what Representative Osterman was saying, I'm no expert on the Board of Fisheries, but I have attended a few over the years, and the members I've talked to, it's been pretty darn unanimous about the support for this issue. And so Judge Johnstone, in my opinion, and I've not talked to them either, I'd be very interested in hearing his opinion, because from what I understand, that would be a minority position.
So noted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to testify early. Thank you.
You bet, Representative Osterman. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to say, in answer to one question was brought up about declaring conflict of interest, and we can make sure to ask Mr. Marquette when he comes up, but every member is required at the beginning of every meeting to go through any potential conflicts that he has, financial conflicts at all, and put those on the table, and then decisions are made at the beginning of every meeting. So those are put on the table.
So if a person is an owner of a, I don't know, I'm guessing out here, a fish processing plant, does he have to put up the information on the fish processing plant and how that may affect it? Or because as Representative Osterman said, that their financial interests should be put forward on the table. Is that what we're saying?
Mr. Chairman, that is done, and Mr. Marcotte can give you the exact way in which it is. I think we might even have the form in this packet that they have to fill out. And I think that was one of the pages.
Would you like Mr. Marcotte to come up now, Representative Seaton? Or can you sit there with him, too, if we got questions from the committee? And
sure, we could go through the rest, and then we can get to, I think that's probably the meat of things, unless, however you want to do it, Mr. Chairman.
We have Representative Tuck has a question. I think that would just be good, because then I think that it would be beneficial for the committee to be able for you to get both opinions and work together. I think
that'd
I like
be fine
to do
with
that.
Me. Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
And Representative Tuck has a question for, I believe, the sponsor.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted, I see percentages of proposals that had some sort of conflict of interest. Do you have any examples of proposals and the number of people who had to excuse themselves on a particular proposal? Is there such numbers by any chance available? Just to get an idea of how, when we looked at some proposals, how we just really have diminished the opportunity for people to be able to speak on particular issues.
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Marcotte prepared this independently of my office, so this wasn't my office preparing this. But I would say that most of the recusals take place because of the regional nature of the fisheries. In other words, if you're a fisherman in southeastern Alaska and you are looking at gill netting operations in another area of the state, even if you're a fisherman, you're not recused from those things because unless you have a cousin or an aunt or uncle out in that area. So generally what happens is these recusals come in huge blocks. A member that represents an area where the statewide three-year cycle, where that proposal book is, then the person who has that extended family has to recuse themselves from a whole lot and other folks don't. And I think that's the answer to the question.
Just Mr. Marcotte might be able to. And I'll ask Mr. Marcotte when after he introduces himself. Did you have another question?
No, that was it. Thank you.
Representative Kosak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, can you tell me just on the family, if it's broken out based on family, how many of these conflicts would be taken out if just the family definition were changed? Because I understand, you know, the extended family, there's a lot of extended family, a lot of folks in the regionality of it, but if it's directly impacting their bottom line versus it's just an issue of directly impacting their family's bottom line. You know what I mean?
Good question.
And under both under the current law and HB 41, if it affects your bottom line or your immediate family's bottom line, you wouldn't be able to vote anyway. But I do not, maybe Mr. Marcotte does, I don't have the breakdown of how many of those were extended families or were immediate families. That, but if we could ask Mr. Marcotte, Mr. Chairman.
And if we may, just trying to bring things back in order here for our clerk and stuff. We'll go back to Ledge 101. Direct questions through the chair, and we'll kind of organize it through that way. Any more questions for Representative Seaton at this time? Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Seaton, on maybe I missed it on page 2 of the bill, your bill, line 5. If a conflict is determined to exist, how is that done? And who determines it? I mean, maybe it's already in statute or administrative code, but
Mr. Chairman, if I could defer that to Mr. Marcotte, he's the one that actually does that, handles that, if that would be appropriate.
That's fine. And for the committee members here, we just received from staff that they have asked staff to Representative Seaton's office to get a copy of the form that they used to declare conflict, and so we can get that to the committee members here for the next hearing on that. And so we'll have that one for everybody to look at. And then we'll also, while we're there doing some house cleaning, contact the ACs and the past chairs and have someone from the Department of Law get more requests. Mr. Marquette.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Jim Marcotte. I'm the Board of Fisheries Executive Director. And I did compile the statistics on the board recusals in the past. And just this past week, I've updated it to bring it current with a meeting that just concluded Sunday in Anchorage. So it's as up to date as it could be. And it looks back over a 9-year period, which because the board's on a 3-year cycle, it's three complete 3-year cycles. So it's a good representative overview.
And Mr. Just on that point, and then I was trying to get back to where Representative Seaton and Edgman had discussed earlier. And do you think that that's why this was organized originally? Because it goes to different regions around the state on a 3-year cycle where you have 7 members, an odd number there, that are have different time periods where they're appointed onto the board, that the intent was to try and make sure that that's mixed up, for lack of better words, or make sure that, you know, those conflicts are moved around. And it seems to me that that might have been the purpose, and I don't know if mixed up is the right word or not, probably not, but I think you understand what I'm saying.
Right. Well, Mr. Chairman, I think there are two goals. One is, several goals. One is you want a board with a lot of diversity. You want a board with people from different geographic areas of the state that have knowledge of different fisheries. And so that's one goal. But also through the Executive Branch Ethics Act, it's written so that people can't vote on something that they would have a direct personal or financial interest in. So those are some of the competing goals there. The other part about that 3-year cycle is that instead of having one meeting about salmon, the next meeting about crab, and the next meeting about sport grayling fishing or something, the board has found it works the best to deal with all the fishing issues in a particular region, like Bristol Bay at one meeting and Prince William Sound at another meeting. As was pointed out, if you do have a meeting, say, in Southeast on crab, and you have a board member that happens to be a crab permit holder for commercial fishing in Southeast, then he would potentially have a conflict of interest in some proposals. Maybe not proposals that are distant to where he fishes, but close to his fishing grounds. Typically, a conflict would be ruled on that. But in crab fishing elsewhere in the state, he wouldn't. But what that member brings is expertise about crab fishing in general, issues about pot stacking, registration in the different fisheries, the particulars about gear, and that sort of thing. So the members have different expertise that they bring on any different proposal.
And because they do have that different expertise, but I would imagine that all 7 of them have a pretty broad base knowledge of fisheries in general. Would that be a good assumption, or?
Mr. Chairman, in general, yes. The rich diversity of fisheries in Alaska, though, is phenomenal, and it's quite an education to get to travel around the state over a 3-year period and learn about these very unique fisheries.
Yeah, because that's kind of been my sense, too, because they do get to travel and listen to other issues. And they're generally selected because of their background and their knowledge. I mean, they know a lot about different fisheries issues, whether it's, you know, sport, commercial crabbing, subsistence. They're fairly knowledgeable, at least in a general sense, on almost all aspects of fishing. I mean, correct assumption.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I think that was a yes. You were shaking your head. Yes. The clerk can't read.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I don't intend to cover the overview that Representative Seaton provided on some of the data, but I did want to speak briefly about the procedures and about the board's read on this. And it's at the very beginning of the board meetings where it's actually the first item up after introductions, where the chair will call on each of the board members and ask them to go through and describe their income sources, not income amounts, but just what their sources of income are, list any personal or financial interest that they or their family members may have in fishery-related businesses, and also to identify any personal or financial interest that they or their family members may have in regard to any of the specific proposals.
Mr. Marcotte, just meeting. For people who aren't in the room here who are listening in on this, I think what we're working off is this ethics disclosure form. Is that kind of
correct?
Working off of
and this is a standard form or basically an outline or a checklist that's provided to both the Board of Fishery and Board of Game members. It's in their packet at each meeting. Most of the board members have already prepared a written narrative of who their family members are, what their income sources are, what their overlap in fisheries may be. And for some families, it's considerable. Other families, their family members don't have an active participation in fishing in Alaska.
On that point, so is that done like in a letter form, and where is it required? Is it a form, or how do they get that? Or I don't see that here.
Okay, it's not a form that Mr. Chairman. It's not a form that the members fill out. It's the information that they present at the meeting verbally on the record. And then after they present that, then the chairman will invite questions from other board members in case, and often a board member will say, well, okay, I understand you crab fish, or you may own a drift permit, but you fish in these areas. And they'll sort through the particulars on it. And then based on that discussion, the chairman of the Board of Fisheries would make a ruling as to whether or not that board member could participate or not be a participant in different proposals.
Mr. Marquette, then, so they're not required, you know, Representative Osterman kind of talked about putting their financial information out there, so that's not required. I know that as legislators, we got lots of all that stuff to fill out, and we're also required to state if there's a bill in fisheries or on the floor, something has to do with fishing. You know, certainly Representative Seaton announces that he may have a potential conflict and like that. And then all his financial records are available and stuff of what we do in the legislature. So as and Representative Osterman said that he would like to see somewhere in the bill, I thought that's what he said, where if there's a conflict, that all their financial information is put forth, but they don't currently do that now?
Mr. Chairman, they don't fill out forms and identify dollar values. It's not like a IRS-type accounting, but they will say what their income sources are if they own a permit or if their family members own a charter fishing operation. That sort of thing. And the board, when they make the decision or when the chairman makes a ruling, it's not based on a dollar threshold if it's over, you know, $100 or $500 or $5,000. It's whether or not the board determines if it's a significant conflict.
And I just kind of bring that up because I know Representative Seaton worked pretty darn hard. I think he worked on the State Affairs Committee as a subcommittee member on ethics. If I remember correctly, they put in a lot of time on that, and as legislators, we're required that. And I thought that, I don't know if that's what Representative Osterman was trying to get at or what, but so that there's financial disclosures on that, because it is a public board dealing with public resources, and that there should be strict guidelines as to the amount of a value of particular interest or fishery or discussion is, and I, that's kind of what I'm trying to get at, but there's nothing in the bill here that currently does that, I don't think. Is there Representative Seaton?
Mr. Chairman, there's nothing in here that changes the financial disclosures that are currently required under the Executive Ethics Act. That's correct.
Okay, thank you. I asked Representative Seaton because he'd know, because he knows what those laws are. He wrote them, or helped write them for our approval. Go ahead, Representative Market.
Senator, yeah. Thank you. That was an easy
Representative
question.
Seaton.
Thank you. Let's see. I think just a couple other things to really add is that in that handout, there is a chart showing the two different definitions of family, the one that's applied to the executive branch that's a broader definition, it's more inclusive. Yeah, page 3 on that handout. And then the one that applies to the legislative branch, which is a little bit more restrictive. So as written, if this bill were to pass, that would be a significant change.
Mr. Chairman. There you are, Representative Kawasaki. Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To go back to the correspondence from Judge Johnstone for just a second, I've been able to read the letter since I made my comments, and if I understand the letter correctly, and I would ask Mr. Marcotte to verify that, Judge Johnstone does support the provision of House Bill 42, which would narrow the definition of family members, as we have before us here on this page from Representative Seaton, which to some degree would accomplish the purpose of House Bill 41. Maybe not as fully or as complete as the bill sponsor would like, but I thought it important that clarification be made. And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to know if Mr. Marcotte would agree with how I presented that, or I mischaracterized it.
Okay, correct. You're asking Mr. Marcotte his opinion of what Board Member Johnstone.
That's correct,
would
Mr. Chairman.
Think.
Correct.
No. What he stated. What he's put into writing to the committee.
If he wants to make a guess at what Representative Johnstone's intent was, I guess right. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I did have a conversation with Member Johnstone yesterday, and he prepared this letter for distribution at the meeting today. I think it's sufficient that you can read through it. He did express some reservations about the board member with a conflict participating in the deliberations, but he was supportive of that aspect of the bill that would narrow the definition of family. There was a question earlier about what the real impact of that would be. It's very difficult to know because in the past, 9 years that this data set comes from, we really haven't asked that question to mark out one column of which what the conflict potential would be for just their main household members versus their broader extended family. But yeah. Offhand, I'd say it's something on the order of maybe a half or so of the times where the conflicts arise because it's a family member that's not one of their household members. So it really can vary a lot, but it's something on the order of about half the time.
And Representative Edgman, on this letter, where am I reading? Where are you reading that at?
Mr. Chairman, the bottom sentence, where Judge Johnstone speaks to supporting the narrowing of definition of family members.
Okay, and just so the record, so people know what it says here, there's a page of why he maybe doesn't like it. And then at the bottom it says he does support the aspect, what aspect that narrows the definition of family members, so we'd like to see that tightened up. So him and Representative Kawasaki can have a discussion maybe. With that point, Mr. Marcotte, did you have more to add?
The only concluding point that I have, Mr. Chairman, is that neither the Department of Fish and Game nor the Board of Fisheries has developed an official position on the bill at this time. But I would add that the way it's written, it fine-tunes the procedures. It's not a revolutionary change, and most of the board members have expressed general comfort with how the bill is written.
on that point, as somebody who works directly with them, as the executive director of the Board of Fisheries, does this bill, is it going to have a significant impact on the Board of Fisheries? And you might need to take your government hat off and just give us your opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's sometimes difficult to do. I guess the two interests are the quality of the discussion, bringing in the expertise, and I think it's a step in that direction. The flip side concern is, does it compromise the integrity of the board? And that's a very important part of the board process, is the public respect and the stature of the board, the integrity, that decisions are being made in the best interest of the state and not in anyone's personal interest. But I really think, as written, with the keeping that restriction on voting, but allowing a board member to participate in the deliberations on the record, that does strike a good balance between those two competing interests.
So just on that issue then, so if family was tightened up in one way and because integrity, that's kind of what we deal with, and quite frankly, it's been in question, you know, a little bit lately. And that's a hard thing to overcome once accusations are made, whether they're true or not. And so with that, you know, what Representative Seaton, I think, worked on was to try and provide for that integrity, is where full financial disclosures were done. Is that, in your opinion, how do you establish integrity?
Mr. Chairman, that...
Would that do it?
Yeah, I think my statement was that this bill, I don't feel, compromises that public credibility in the board and the board members. So I think that the integrity of the board process would be maintained.
Without financial disclosure?
Well, Mr. Chairman, they currently do have the financial disclosures at the beginning of the meeting. It's just they're not filling out forms or specifying dollar amounts that they earn in different fisheries, but they do disclose what their financial associations are in the different fisheries currently, and this bill does not seek a change in that. And I believe that's what Representative Osterman was referring to, is that how the board members do. They identify what their potential financial interests are at the beginning of the meeting, and that's...
Yeah, and just, I'll get to Representative Wilson just a minute. And only was because, again, we're, as legislators, we've identified that, you know, that's a very important part of what we do to make sure that we're ensuring the public of the trust that they've given us, you know, and I don't mean to keep going back to Representative Seed, but I think he felt that that was a good thing, and that's what we do, and obviously most people did, because that's what passed into law. And I just was going back to that. Representative Wilson?
I have a question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that if the people that served on this board had to give financial information. I mean, fishermen are really tight-lipped when it comes to how much money they made or how much fish they caught, and they try to keep that kind of a secret between them. And if they have a telephone conversation with a wife, they have code words that mean certain things so that no one knows all this. And so I think if we made them give financial information we probably wouldn't get anybody to serve, but I could be wrong on that, so could you kind of let me know what your thoughts are on that?
Not in code words.
Okay. Thank you, through the chair, Representative Wilson. I think that probably would discourage some applicants. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't know for sure what you were trying to get at, but I thought you were trying to get that we should make them do financial disclosure and the exact amounts and everything. I don't think it would be difficult to get enough people to serve, I think, because that's a pretty...
No, let me clear that up very fast.
Okay.
No.
Okay. I couldn't read between the lines for sure.
this is not my bill. and it was and the issue was brought up, but you know you're right, because there's a huge discussion because people don't want to be on city councils, people don't want to be on borough assemblies because of that, you know, where they have to report any business associations over $1,000 business dealings, where they do have to give their financial disclosures, not just them and their wife and their families and all that. And it has had a huge impact on Alaska and who wants to try and do that.
But they don't have to tell the amount.
And Representative Wilson said, I don't think they tell the amount in dollars, but I think that they do.
I don't think so.
But I'm just saying, no, your question was no, that's not my intent here, and we don't need to go down that rabbit trail. But Representative Seaton, if you want to bring it in, you go ahead. Representative Seaton.
I wasn't meaning to bring that in. I think that
it was you who brought it into the ethics legislation, I think. So.
Mr. Chairman, I was the one that put the local option so that the local voters can vote themselves out of requiring those for the municipality. Now, some voters have decided to leave it in.
It's a different bill. But I do agree with Representative Wilson. I think that has had an impact of people who in their desire to serve on these boards. And I think that's the point that I think is a valid issue.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do agree with the financial disclosure that is required at the beginning of the meetings are adequate, and that I think the public is well served by those. But I think more detailed than that wouldn't really be serving the interests of the public in looking at those members voting on regulations. But I would like to point out, and you have a sheet in there that I didn't update it through 2010, but for the years 2003, 2004, 2005, and 2006, you have a comparison of the way the Executive Ethics Act is applied across the different boards in the state.
And where is that, Representative Seaton?
It's in your packet, and let me pull it out so you can see it. It looks like this one right here.
It's right up the system.
Somewhere around the sixth page here. Okay. And I think that's where it's labeled page 2 at the bottom. Is that where we're at? It's just kind of important to make sure that people are trying to follow this along. We're not in the room here.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman.
Know where we're at. And we do have it. And it is in a package, it looks like this, for the members here. And it talks about how ADA at the top, and it says at the top, the accusal is due to conflict of interest, according to the ethics report 2003-2006, is the working document that we're talking about.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if you'll notice, that these are all statewide boards. And if you take 2003, you see ADA. There was 4 recusals in ADA. The social work examiners was 1. The local boundary commission, working on annexations and all those things, was 1. Real estate appraisers was 1. Pharmacy board was 1. Board of Marine Pilots, 1. Board of Fisheries, 3 recusals on 42 different regulatory proposals. So there were 43 times in which there were proposals that there was a recusal there. If you look at 2006, you'll see the, Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, there's 1. We had, and there's 103 regulatory proposals that were covered by the Board of Fisheries. And that's, on this paper, on this ethics disclosure and the extended family, that's been the different application that occurred. And in when we last had this, and I didn't call Ms. Gallant again, but when we had this in the previous legislature, and you have the testimony in your packet there, the state medical board is testifying that if a member board member's involvement is extensive, the board member would recuse himself. In the Board of Fisheries, if there's not extensive involvement, if there's any involvement by the person or their extended family, if you look at the way they apply it, at the bottom of that page 6, it's they're looking at the regulatory aspect of the board.
Same page.
The next page. Excuse me. I skip forward to the next page, and you'll see this is testimony that was given.
I have family definitions on my representative seat.
You do?
Family definitions, too, on the next page.
Okay, well, I'll have to make some copies. I'll just let you know that the testimony from the executive director of the Board of Medical, the state medical board, was that, you know, if a member with an extended family, the question was whether the members with extended family who practice medicine don't necessarily cause the board member to be recused, and Ms. Gallant said she wasn't aware of any such case. In fact, there are parents and children who are in medical practice together. The exception is that those, you know, who hold a professional license would be expected to adhere to the ethics of the profession until proven otherwise. So the application to all the other boards and commissions that we were able to find was much more restrictive as far as the application of the idea of any kind of involvement by a family member or even the member themselves. And so I will provide you that testimony from the previous hearing, and I'm sorry I didn't have it in your packet. I didn't realize it was. You may remember when she testified as the state medical board, but these numbers, that's why these numbers are so different between on the chart 2003, 4, 5, and 6 is the way it's being applied on all the other boards and commissions across the state.
That's kind of an interesting, and I was trying to work through that too when I look at some of the percentage-wise, and I do think that that's an interesting thing where you were talking about the percentage of recusals on that, because like in 06, it's 3 of 101, so you've got 3%, but yet, like in 2003, where you've got 3 of 42, you're at, you know, 20%? No, 12%. You know, 4 of 11, you're almost at half. You know, in 04, it bounces around quite a bit. And then I was trying to play that out in my mind, the discussion where I asked Mr. Marquette about being able to go to different regions through different cycles, and I think that's probably the reason why they did that. Because I think that statistically, when we look at this number, there's a reason for that.
And Mr. Chairman, that's been exactly the point that you're making, is that when you go to Bristol Bay region, or you go to Southeastern, you go to a rural region where you have the economics of the region is highly dependent on fishery. If there's a board member there, they get recused from a number of proposals. So it may only be three people being recused, but it's on a huge number of issues because that's where they're regionally looking at that issue that year, and that's why there's this dramatic effect depending upon which year it is and what proposal cycle.
And I have to excuse myself. I've been corrected by Representative Edgman, and it's Mr. Marcotte.
Sure.
Yeah, Representative Gutenberg reminds me of that all the time.
Yes, I correct him on your name all the time.
That was too easy. I took a shot for you. Um, Representative Seaton or Mr. Marcotte, is there any more information we should be trying to divulge you in here today, or we'll try and see if there's any public comments out there? Or?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, I understand that Lance Nelson from the Department of Law was going to be listening in, also from Anchorage, and he can provide some added information of how he provides guidance to the board members and the chairman as they go through that. But let me also echo Representative
Osterman.
Yeah, Osterman's comment that as written, with the review date being due January 31, 2012, basically that allows the review over one full cycle. And as you've seen, that each cycle is going to have its own pattern, that just the cycle identified coming up would be the Cook Inlet and Kodiak cycle. But you'd almost have to go three cycles to get a better representative sample of the different.
We certainly maybe could use this for at least the Cook Inlet cycle, but that was made in fun. Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While we still have Mr. Marcotte here at the table,
another 1 or 2 years.
I wanted to see if he agreed with my assessment, and this is my fourth committee hearing on this bill. And each time that we have a hearing on this, we trot out sort of a long list of boards and commissions, and we try to compare the atmosphere of the Board of Fisheries to a number of other boards and commissions, which you know, arguably are not even apples and oranges, but they're not even comparable in any way in terms of
fruit,
you know,
and nuts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was at the tip of my tongue. The Board of Fisheries environment, it's so hard to try to project how public it is, how highly scrutinized it is, how in some respects there's a self-policing mechanism built in because of the public nature of having to make decisions that are very controversial, that at times involved allocating resources between competing user groups that are sitting right there in the audience in front of you, that these other boards and commissions don't have to undertake. And I don't think I need to remind anyone in this building that we had a very controversial vote on a board of fisheries member who might have, I don't even think he served a term.
Correct.
But the perception that he was on one side of the issue already before he even got to the board resulted in a 39-16 defeat of him before he even got on the board. So, you know, that's the hard part, and it's a little frustrating for me, is trying to convey this sense of scrutiny that already is in place, and to have what I consider reasonable changes in House Bill 41 come forward. We sort of fall in this abyss of trying to compare the Board of Fisheries to a bunch of other boards and commissions that have completely different missions, completely different responsibles, less public, publicly charged environment. And really, you know, I would ask anyone, when's the last time the Pharmacy Board had 100 people at their board meeting, with 50 of them each on different issues? You know, it's as you characterized.
You're right, Representative Edgman. And again, it'd be interesting if they did, because, you know, these are issues that are so important to the public. And it's like, but I'd like to see the ACs or something, you know. And you look at the last couple of recent advisory council meetings that went on, where we had like over 500 people in Anchorage and almost 700 or 800 people, I think, in Mat-Su. It took them almost 2 hours to get them through, just to vote for the members. There was a tremendous outpouring of the public because of their interest in, I think, in our resources and how they're managed. And again, it's tires and spacecraft. It's not even. Representative Wilson.
I would like to make a comment about something that's in our packet, because this was the fishing game transition team.
And where are we at, Representative Wilson?
Well, mine was close to the back.
Okay.
And
members have that?
I think everybody
does.
And
just for the people out there, we're at the fish and game transmission team. Issues report to Governor Sarah Palin.
And there was 21 people on that transition team. And inside on page 3, it says recommendations. And it said, one of the recommendations is only the household members or immediate family should be considered for conflict so as not to unfairly bias the process against longstanding families with extensive affected relatives. And then it says the consequences of inaction, lack of valid information in Board of Fisheries deliberations, reluctance of well-qualified members to serve on the board, lack of public confidence in the Board of Fisheries process and state management. So I think those are things that we really need to pay attention to, and that's one reason why I really feel the importance of doing this. So
registered. And I just kind of been trying to follow through here, and before we wrap up, Representative Seaton, I don't know, there's been some talk on maybe potential changes to sunset dates or
yes.
definition of families, and if you've got an intention to maybe do a like a blank CS or amendments or something like that, maybe work. I know Kawasaki, Representative Kawasaki was kind of interested in a family thing, and I think Representative Edgman had mentioned the dates on the sunset clause. We'll get together and work on that too, and that's the good thing about the committee process, is it's a discovery process.
Sure. And Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that, and I'll work with Representative Kawasaki on the date issue. The one of the major changes in the bill is the narrowing to the legislative definition of family. So that's accomplished in the bill, which is what Representative Wilson was just talking about as far as in the transition team report. And it'll be interesting to hear back from the advisory boards, because this bill in this form has been out for at least 4 years. We passed it through the House, and it didn't quite make it through the other body. Anyway, so there's been a lot of public notice and a lot of public comment on this bill, and I think that the original bill that we had and started with 2 years ago was more expansive, allowed voting with the declaration of the conflict. We've removed a number of those things, so I appreciate the accommodation of having the hearing, and we'll get with Representative Kawasaki on the date.
On that point, Representative Seaton, and as you said, this has been around at least 4 years, if not even longer, the discussion on this, but yet it hasn't passed. And then why? And it might be just defining the definition of family. I don't know it, but I think there's some pretty good points, and maybe that's the issue we'll target towards that way or something. We'll work together on it, and if you got questions, remember, ask questions, work with me, and I'll sit down with you and Representative Senior, whatever it's going to take to try and make things the way, make it good for everybody.
Sure, and Mr. Chairman, generally I think that the reason that the bills in previous legislatures did not pass is because it had it so that with a conflict, you could actually vote on the issue like the legislature does, just declaring that, and this doesn't allow that, and so that's why I think when we reach this accommodation of coming down so that you couldn't vote if you had, but you could deliberate, that's why it passed the House so broadly last time, and we'll work.
Just one more, like maybe a house cleaning thing, where it was discussed, and I think very appropriately, by Representative Edgman. And I think that you were going to provide some information on different boards and stuff like that. I don't know how meaningful that is to other members, but to me, I think trying to compare the Board of Fish, I think it was rightly pointed out, with a board and a Board of Game with the other boards, I'm trying to maybe save you a little bit of effort there. I guess if other members think they need it, I know that I don't think that there's really a comparison in the two in the public input. Representative Edgman?
Mr. Chairman, if that was the desire of the committee, I might suggest that we have the director of boards and commission come down here and speak to that effect. Somebody who'd have knowledge of some of these other boards that obviously we don't.
I guess if you want to make that request, we can do that.
No, I'm not making it, Mr. Chairman, specifically, but I'm just
We'll work with the sponsor, and if you, we'll discuss it, Paul. And if we think that adds a benefit, we will. If not, then we'll just keep moving on.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, you do have in your packet there the looking at the number of recusals from those broad number of boards from 2003 to 2006. And unless the committee desires an update on that, I think that gives a general flavor of the number of recusals per board. So,
And like I said, I'll be glad to sit down and work with this on, with you and other groups or whatever to do what we need to do.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. And with that, have a good weekend. We'll call her for a date for today. Oh, that's right. Did we have any public testimony? I don't have anybody signed up. Hearing and seeing none. Make sure we don't miss anybody here. We don't have anybody in the room. We don't have anybody signed up.
Yeah. No, they're all conflicted out.
We will end that for today, and we will start up with committee discussion, and I guess we'll open it up back to public testimony if we feel we need to, in case there's people who want to talk about it. And there was questions to Representative Mr. Johnstone stuff. Thank you.